WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Pulse of the Nation on this glorious Sunday, September 17th. I am Braden Vick, your host of the podcast, and you might be listening at a time when the Giants are trying to lick their wounds and score more than 0 points against the Cardinals. The Bengals try to recover from the absolute slop show in week one as they host the Ravens, and the Jets will somehow have to travel to Dallas and attempt to beat the Cowboys with Zach Wilson as their quarterback. Now, presidential campaigns might have somewhat of a hard time as well winning presidential races, but to give a bit of a primer, here are the 8 states which will determine which way the presidential election in 2024 goes. So if you're anywhere in the Biden or the Trump campaign, or if you're just somebody, well, the Biden-Trump campaign already know this, but this is more for people who don't know maybe which states do we need to track. Well, here we go. We're going to go from west to east. We're going to start off with Nevada. And Nevada is a pretty small state. It's Las Vegas, Reno, Sparks, and Henderson maybe. Nowhere else, pretty much. I mean, it's just the Las Vegas and Reno metros, Clark and Washoe counties. There's literally nothing else. The rest of it is just a bunch of sparse rural areas. It has 6 electoral votes. It has a streak of voting for Democratic candidates. The last time I think it voted for a GOP presidential candidate was 2004 when George Bush beat John Kerry there. But ever since then, it's consistently voted Democratic, albeit a bit narrowly. And 2020, I think Joe Biden won it by 2.3 percentage points. He matched what Hillary Clinton got there in 2016. And Nevada is a very interesting state because it always is close, but Republicans, for you, it's usually no cigar, although there was success there in 2022. Joe Lombardo, the former Clark County Sheriff, he knocked off former governor, Steve Sisolak. Yeah, that's a name I've not heard of in a long time. But response to COVID and that sort of stuff kind of killed Sisolak's chances there. And Nevada now is the GOP governor. There's a couple of other GOP statewide elected officials in Nevada as well. But it's a state that usually votes for Democrats, and it voted for Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto in 2022 as well, by less than a percentage point in a likely to have been a Trump won electorate. So there's caution there. Now, Republicans are hoping that shifts amongst urban Latinas and some urban black voters, especially around Las Vegas, might help them get some of the margins where they need to keep margins down in Clark County to maybe potentially win the state. However, you have, you know, the local, but you have local unions in Las Vegas, which are extremely powerful and likely to obviously go for the current president, Joe Biden. And you have those unions that I think they just unionized an MGM or hotel or something like that. Now, very, very powerful unions in Las Vegas. Plus, there's positive shifts for Democrats in Washoe County and the Reno-Sparks Metro, which that might just be due to more college-educated voters leaving the Republican Party. But I'm using split ticket ratings for this, and I'll tell you if I agree with it or not. Split ticket is a newer site that came on just around after the 2020 elections. It's one of the most reliable sites now for election data and sensible election ratings. They have it as lean Democratic, and I will agree because I think Joe Biden is favored to win this state. However, I do think that it's going to be quite a narrow victory for Joe Biden, as you have these countervailing trends that have so far served to cancel each other out, and I think they will do the same. Moving southeast, we're going to Arizona. 11 electoral votes, and in the early 2020s, it has emerged as one of the core battlegrounds that each party really needs to win the presidential election, especially for Democrats, funnily enough, because Arizona's a state that voted for Trump by a healthy amount, but people are starting to notice. Hillary Clinton gained a lot from where Barack Obama was in 2012, and maybe Arizona could become competitive. And those ideas were brought to life in 2018. Then Democrat Kyrsten Sinema defeated Martha McSally by about 2.4%, flipping, I believe that was formerly Barry Goldwater's Senate seat, and thinking maybe Arizona's starting to become a swing state. And then Joe Biden comes along. He narrowly wins the state of Arizona. Mark Kelly's the second Democrat to defeat Martha McSally. He won by about like 3% or so. And you're starting to think, well, Democrats are starting to win in Arizona. 2022 comes along. The GOP has really good turnout. And they choked. They absolutely choked. They choked the governor's race. They choked the attorney general's race. And the Secretary of State and Senate races were just complete laughingstocks for the Republican Party. In an electorate similar in partisanship to 2016. And you choked two races away and you got blown out in two others. Not great. Not great, especially not great the way the trends have been going in the Phoenix Metro, which is essentially all of Arizona minus Flagstaff, Tucson, Yuma, and Native American areas in the Northeast. And Arizona is a pretty interesting state when you look at the rules, but it's the Phoenix Metro that dominates everything. I'll include Maricopa and Pinal counties here. Maricopa used to be a bellwether county. As Maricopa goes, so does the state. But Maricopa, because of trends, again, suburban trends favoring Democrats, especially you can see this in more of the Dobbs and abortion issues and gay rights issues, things of, well, social issues of that nature, Democrats are starting to gain in these communities. And that especially impacts a state where a large part of the population is suburban or urban. And this isn't limited to just Phoenix. You also have Flagstaff and Tucson that have started to shift left as well. Now, given the trends of the state, Joe Biden won by 0.3% state point. And one of the really interesting things was that Fox News calling Arizona early for Joe Biden in 2020 after, you know, the mail-ins came in after. In Arizona, there, a lot of their voters do vote by mail, and a lot of the later early vote came in. And Aaron Sorkin, who is the chair of the Fox News Decision Desk, he called it for Joe Biden really early, and it was a really stupidly early call. It was a wrong call, but it was a correct call. Shouldn't have called it that early because Trump got it to within 0.5%. But it said that that call potentially dampened some of the momentum of the plot to potentially overturn the election. It's a really interesting factoid. Aaron Sorkin continued to be confident in his call even after Trump was narrowing the margins down further and further and further and further. And it eventually turned out to be correct. We'll see if a call comes that early again in Arizona in 2024. And it actually might, because the signs look absolutely terrible for the Republican Party in Arizona. Their donors have fled them. They're starting to become broke. They're being run by a bunch of Groiper clowns. Like, I'm not going to mince words here. Kelly Ward, what are you doing? Like, you and Martha McSally and Gary Lake and all these other people, Wendy Rogers, I'll mention as a neo-Confederate state legislator from Arizona? Really? Well, they're causing the death of the Arizona GOP because and a state party that hates John McCain is not going to win in Arizona, yet the Arizona GOP has lambasted John McCain ever since he died. And I honestly don't know the reason why. Why? He's not conservative. He was not conservative enough for your liking. He saved Obamacare. Is that it? Because, woof, man. That's certainly not helping your cause. It certainly hasn't helped you in the past three election cycles, I'll tell you that. And with Doug Ducey not running for Senate and your likely Senate nominee being Carrie Lake, Jesus Christ, are you trying to lose? Seriously, Arizona GOP, are you trying to become irrelevant in a state you once dominated? Because these are the consequences of your actions. These are going to be what could happen as a result of what you were doing. And split ticket has it as a toss-up, and I understand why, but I honestly think Biden's favored here. I think he wins the state by more than he wins Nevada by. It's lean Democratic for me. Like, there is zero positive signs for the Republican Party in Arizona. like, I look at the method, look at the trends of Maricopa and Coconino, however you pronounce that county that contains Flagstaff, maybe even more Republican counties like Yavapai and Pinal, then you go into Pima where Tucson is really Democratic. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, you're swinging Yuma County in the southwest your way, but that's not going to outweigh a five-point shift left in Maricopa County. It's just not going to, because there's just too many people in Maricopa. Like, I'm not sure how the Republicans get a win in Arizona. Like, I honestly am not sure. And that is something that the Republican Party has to rectify, either by potentially expanding competition to another state like Nevada, or potentially investing more in the upper Midwest or in the South, where your other swing states are going to lie. And this is also not helped by the fact that Texas is now on the map for 2024. Yes, I said it. Texas is one of the eight key battleground states. Don't at me, okay? I have a pretty much a 40-minute plus long episode in season one, which explains why I think Texas is going to be competitive, not just here on the Senate level. I'm not talking about the Senate race, though. I'm talking about the presidential race, where it is lean Republican. It's better for Democrats when split ticket has it. They have it as likely Republican. The 40 electoral votes. Like, if Republicans cannot win Texas in the presidential race, you should honestly consider folding your party and starting a new one. Because for a Republican party in this day and age to lose Texas, a lot of things have to go wrong. And the majority of those things are going wrong for the Republicans. They're hemorrhaging support in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro. You're getting absolutely destroyed in Austin and San Antonio metros. I mean, sure, Houston, you're not getting destroyed, but you're still losing ground, especially in the airport of Harris County. Like, there are positive signs, you know, you are swinging South Texas your way. You're swinging, well, Latinos all across the state your way. That is a good thing. But, like, you're also losing ground in Amarillo. You're losing ground in Lubbock. You're losing ground in Abilene. Like, some of these, like, mid-sized cities, like, you know, Waco, Killeen, Temple, even Tyler, for God's sakes, is starting to swing against you, even though some of these areas might still be really Republican. Biden is shifting those areas his way somewhat. And because of that, Texas is now on the map. I believe Texas will be within 3 points. I still expect Donald Trump to win the state, but I think it could get really close. And I'm not going to spend any more time on Texas, because if I did, then I'd be here all day. And honestly, I do not want to be here all day, as my voice is already starting to give out. So we'll move on to Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin has been in the news for a lot of other things that I'll get to in Friday's newsflash. So I won't get into the whole Robin Voss redistricting per Savage thing. If you want to know about the Supreme Court election, it's the second half of, I think it's the first half, actually, of season one, episode one of Bulls of the Nation. The very first episode I did was about the Wisconsin Supreme Court election that led to the mess that's happening in Wisconsin in the first place. And there's also Chicago mayoral election that is also might come up in the news flash as well. But we're talking about Wisconsin as a state. It is a toss-up state. I agree with split ticket there. And reasons being is that it is essentially, you have a few regions. You have the Milwaukee, and you have its suburbs. You know, the WOW region, Waukesha, Zaki, and Washington. Suburbs and exurbs are really rock-ribbed Republican, you know, essentially German, Lutheran, religious conservatives that are starting to shift to the left because of, you guessed it, college education. And college-educated voters trending to the left and basically everywhere across the country. And so the Republicans are starting to lose ground in those areas, but they're also starting to gain ground in a lot of the rural areas, the northern rurals and southwest Wisconsin. But there's also the problem of Madison and the Madison metro to worry about. Dane County is becoming an absolute, how do I describe this? This is becoming an absolute punching force for Democrats in the state of Wisconsin. Like, the margins that Democrats are getting in Dane County these days are almost Bashar al-Assad-esque. That's how bad it's getting for Republicans in Madison. It also doesn't help you have the University of Wisconsin-Madison there as well. And you also have, like, Eau Claire and La Crosse, which are small cities, pretty Democratic cities in the rural areas that help Democrats as well. There's also the Bow, you know, you have the Fox Valley, and, you know, you have Oshkosh and Green Bay, especially Winnebago as well, that are pretty competitive, lean Republican, but Democrats can win in them as well, especially in statewide elections. But yeah, this is a state that went to Donald Trump in 2016 and goes for Joe Biden very narrowly in 2020. I think he won it by like 0.6 percentage point or something. And that was thanks to Milwaukee absentees from the city of Milwaukee. It's one of, I believe, five states that Biden flipped in his direction. This is the second one we're talking about here. And the thing with Wisconsin is that it is going to be close again. But the problem is, again, given the fact that the rurals in the upper Midwest are not as religious as the rurals down here in the South, given the fact that they're more socially liberal, given college education trends in this area, given the punch that urban areas still provide for Democrats, I'm not sure where Donald Trump is going to be able to make up the margins. Like, does he have to hope that Black and Latino voters in Milwaukee just don't show up? Like, that's what he probably has to hope for, because the suburbs and exurbs of Milwaukee aren't going to provide you good news. And you can't rely on the northern rurals or the driftless to swing your way because of the Dobbs issue now. Like, yes, Ron Johnson won against Mandela Barnes by 1 point, but that's because the Democrats stopped funding him. Like, Tony Evers won by 3 points in Wisconsin in 2022 with a Trump won elector. If we were doing elections in the year 22 or something, oh, good Lord. That's a time when Jesus Christ was still alive, I think. So, like, maybe he would be elected president in that time. I don't know. But speaking of presidents getting elected, I think Joe Biden is a slight favorite. Split ticket has it as a toss-up. And I'll agree just because of how close Wisconsin's probably going to be. But I'm going to be honest. With the clown show that's going on in the Wisconsin Republican Party with this whole redistricting thing and, you know, Scott Walker's legacy being burned to the ground, like, they're going to be in a chaotic mode for 2024. And given the trends that are already working against Republicans in Wisconsin, where are you going to make up the numbers? And that is something that the Republican Party has to answer before I consider them to be 50-50. I'll say it's a toss-up, but I think Democrats have the edge in Wisconsin. Now, speaking of a Midwestern state where Democrats definitely have the edge in, it is Michigan. And oh boy, things have quickly gone south for the Republican Party in Michigan. Those ambitions for the Republican Party took a flight down south to Nashville, because dear God, it is bad for the Republicans in the Mitten State. Now, 4 years ago, the Republicans had a trifecta. Well, over 4 years ago. But in early 2019, they had a trifecta, but they were about to lose it because Gretchen Whitmer destroyed Bill Schuette by, I believe, like 13 points or so. And, you know, a bunch of statewide elected Democrats got elected in the executive office. But the legislature was still Republican. Go to 2022 and a midterm that's supposed to be a Republican wave, and you give up a trifecta. The Democrats get a trifecta in Michigan in 2022. And Gretchen Whitmer gets another double-digit victory under her belt. Like, listen. Not only do you have to deal with the fact that Michigan Democrats are finally starting to pass a lot of the parts of their agenda, you also have to consider the fact that the Michigan GOP is broke, and it is literally kicking each other in the balls. I'm not even joking. It was a Clare County GOP meeting where one GOP executive member kicked another one right in the family jewels. Like, it's just, y'all, Like, if you have a state party that's fighting itself, who is being led by an absolute nutcase in Christina Caramo, who believes that Beyonce is the devil spawn of Satan himself, and who also allegedly threatened to drive her family over a cliff. Yes, that was the GOP's nominee for Secretary of State in 2022. Things are not looking good for the Michigan GOP, I'm going to tell you that right now. The split ticket has it as lean Democratic. I have it as likely Democratic. I think the GOP is going to get stomped, relatively speaking, in Michigan. It's going to be an over 5-point victory for Joe Biden. I think people are going to be shocked by how not close Michigan is. And it shouldn't be a surprise because Western Michigan, like Kent and Ottawa counties swinging issue, like Kent was a really historically Republican county, is now voting for Democrats regularly, the Grand Rapids Metro. Ottawa County is literally led by Groypers at the county executive level and is also swinging heavily to Democrats. So you have the local backlash as well you have to think about. Yeah, sure, Republicans could be gaining in areas like Flint and Muskegon and areas like that, but and maybe Bay City, but that's not going to help you when you're getting routed in the Detroit Metro, when you're losing ground in Macomb, when you're continually getting stopped in Oakland County, for God's sakes, when Ann Arbor and Lansing, two college towns, provide Democrats with ungodly Kim Jong-un-like margins. When you have suburban counties, you know, like Eaton, potentially, that could go towards the go to the Democratic Party. Trump won counties that could flip. And you have a situation in which, and not to forget the whole idea of the city of Detroit, you have a situation in which Democrats are the clear favorites and could provide Republicans with an absolute stopping, because the Michigan Democrats are far more competent than the Michigan GOP at this point. And the Michigan GOP is, again, they're just in a state of chaos right now. They've lost their power and they're resorting to fighting each other. And that's not going to win you a presidential election in the state of Michigan. Now, the good thing for the GOP is that they don't need Michigan to win. But Lord, if they're not close to Michigan, they're going to find it a lot harder to compete in the upper Midwest than they would expect. And speaking of the upper Midwest, probably one of the key states to watch in 2024, even those with just a passing history or memory of politics knows that people are always going to talk about Pennsylvania as pretty much the state that delivered the presidency for Joe Biden in 2020, arguably delivered the presidency for Trump in 2016. And the GOP at least isn't broke. At least they are semi-competent. It doesn't stop them from nominating Christian fascists and Dominionists for governor that lose by 15 points and nearly lose Lancaster County. But it also doesn't stop them from nominating New Jersey residents to be a U.S. senator from the state of Pennsylvania and then get stopped by 5 points by the lieutenant governor of said state of Pennsylvania. So, yeah, electorally they're not having the best of it, but, I mean, they seem to be a pretty competent operation. Things aren't as bad in Pennsylvania as they are in Michigan, of course. So I agree with split ticket that it is a toss-up. But again, trends aren't going Republicans' way. I'm not even just talking about the Philly Metro. I'm not even talking about the college-educated suburbs in Montgomery, heavily Democratic county that's still shifting left. I'm not even talking about like Delaware or Chester counties, which are continuing to shift left. And obviously the city of Philly providing huge margins for Democrats. I'm not even talking about the rebound Democrats are hoping for potentially in Northeast Pennsylvania, the Scranton, Wilkes-Barre areas. I'm not even talking about the swings left that you saw in 2020 in the Allentown area or in Bucks County, another suburban, exurban county in the Philly Metro. I'm talking about Allegheny County. I'm talking about Pittsburgh. Because it is quickly becoming the socialist capital of the Midwest. So one of the socialist capitals alongside Chicago. And I say that kind of in jest, but especially for Chicago. But in Pittsburgh, I honestly am not. Because Pittsburgh has become very progressive. And what is the reason for that? Well, look at what Pittsburgh has invested in for the past couple of decades. Education. college-educated people tend to now be more to the left, especially on social issues. And, well, you see what you get. You have a vastly left-trending county where, you know, the suburbs and exurbs of Pittsburgh are starting to shift left in Allegheny at a significant clip, especially North Allegheny, a really historically Republican area that has started shifting to the Democrats very recently. And, you know, it's starting as been starting to elect a lot of socialists to office in the county. Like, the next county executive in Allegheny County is going to be a socialist, and Sarah Innamorato, who is a former state representative. So yeah, you have that situation happening, which serves to counteract some stuff that's happening. Like, Pennsylvania, like, you have Pittsburgh, you have Pennsylvania, and you have the Philly area. Now, Pennsylvania is just, like, rural Pennsylvania, really Republican. That's where the margins come from for Republicans. But if even that's starting to trend against you, that's not a good idea, Republicans. You probably should get to work on that. Same thing with Southwest Pennsylvania, swung heavily to Republicans during the Trump era, and Democrats are looking to stem the bleeding there. So, like, Republicans have opportunities at the very least in Pennsylvania. However, the way the state is swung, I would give Democrats a slight edge here as well. And that means I'm giving Democrats the edge, of course, in the presidential election. Now, of course, I'll be expanding more on potentially why I think this as a national versus a state by state thing. That will probably be something, a series I do starting next week, where I look at the case for Democrats to do really well, and the following week I'll be looking at the case for Republicans to do really well in 2024. But right now, given where things are, given recent election results, it's a toss-up, but I give Democrats the edge in Pennsylvania. Now, going down south, we're going to North Carolina. And first off, my thoughts are with the people at UNC who had to go through another lockdown for a real situation. Of course, a few weeks ago, the UNC Chapel Hill campus had an active shooter that left one person dead, shot one person, killed them. And now they just had to go through another lockdown drill again. The latest on the situation, and I'll look this up right now as of the time of recording. I'm not sure if this is another true active shooter, or this is just a false alarm. I'm looking at that right now. But again, for the second time in 3 weeks, especially the toll on the mental health that's being taken on the college students there in Chapel Hill, my thoughts are with them, and I'm hoping that those students will be able to make a full, you know, mental recovery. And I'm trying to get the latest right now. They were in a shelter in place. I don't know if there was like an actual no shooter. You'll know more about this by the time this episode is released. But again, thoughts are with everybody at UNC as they try to recover from the traumatic events that have happened over the past month. Going into North Carolina itself, Chapel Hill seems to be a big part of the equation for Democrats to potentially compete in North Carolina. This is the state that Democrats have identified as a state they want to target to flip towards them, as opposed to just really holding a state. This is the one clearest opportunity for Democrats to expand the electoral map, and all indications are they are going to take it. And it's going to take a lot of things, because North Carolina is a very complicated state politically. Like, you have Western North Carolina, and like you have like the Piedmont area, which is extremely Republican, very religious, which is why I stayed Republican for so long in this area. You have the Charlotte Metro, you have Greensboro, you have Durham Chapel Hill areas, you have the Raleigh Metro, and you have, you know, the Fayetteville area, Wilmington, and then you like have South North Carolina, East North Carolina, and a bunch of other rural areas as well that have contributed like the Republicans have gotten enough margins out of where they need to have won this state all but one time in the 21st century, and that one time was 2008, of course. But, you know, given the narrow margin that Donald Trump won it by in 2020, given the fact that North Carolina continually has elected Democrats statewide, they elected Roy Cooper in 2016 and 2020 as Donald Trump won the state both times, given the fact that of leftward trends, not just in the Charlotte metro, not just in Raleigh or Durham or Chapel Hill or Greensboro or Wilmington, but also in Western North Carolina more broadly, the Asheville area, more specifically in Hendersonville as well, you have a situation where, again, like with split ticket, I agree that it is a toss-up. And I'm going to say this. I think North Carolina is going to be the closest state in the 2024 presidential election. It is going to be within 8%. Dare I say it's probably going to be within 0.5%. It's going to be a very close race all the way until the end. We're probably not going to know a winner in North Carolina for a pretty long time. Although by the time North Carolina is called, we'll have long since known probably the winner of the 2024 presidential election. And a key state to determining who wins this presidential election is Georgia. This is the last of the states I will be going through today. There are a couple of other states to watch out for, like on the GOP side, Kansas and Alaska. And on the Democratic side, maybe a state like a Virginia. Yeah, or like a Minnesota or New Hampshire or like a New Mexico or something like that. But Georgia is the state that the famed state in the South that Democrats flipped from being like Trump by 5 in 2016 to Joe Biden nearly flipping the state by 11,779 votes in 2020. That's where the 11,780 votes came from when the call from Trump to Raffensperger, as I mentioned in Friday's episode, the newsflash. And this state is also pretty complicated. So let me just go through it really quickly. You have North Georgia, which is really Republican and has been forever since before the Civil War. Like the really like unionist areas like in Northeast Georgia, especially as well. This really gives Republicans a lot of the margins that they need to win. It's pretty populated as well. And then you have this sprawling Atlanta metro that has shifted left at a very fast clip. And I'm not just talking about Fulton or DeKalb County. I'm talking about, you know, like in the north suburbs, you have college-educated voters of all stripes coming to the left. They are diversifying pretty, you can find very large Asian-American Pacific Islander groups, special Latino groups in like counties like Gwinnett County. Forsyth has a very large Indian-American population. North Fulton, you can see that as well. And also they are getting somewhat blacker, but the south of the metro there's been a lot of demographic change in the past 20 years. Some of the areas that are majority white, it has become significantly blacker over time. Like Henry County shifted 16 points left from 2016 to 2020. And that is because the county got a lot blacker in that time. There's a lot of growing population in areas like Stockbridge and, you know, in areas like Covington. I believe that's in Newton County, which has also shifted to the left at a very fast clip. Rockdale County, especially Rockdale County, which is south of DeKalb, has been going from one of the most Republican counties in the past 30 years to one of the most Democratic counties in the state of Georgia. It even shifted left during Stacey Abrams' 2022 run. It shifted left from 2020 to 2022. If you want to know how bad it is for Republicans in the South Atlanta metro, there you go. And Stacey Abrams lost by 7.5 points, and she was still able to swing Rockdale County left, okay? Plus, Raphael Warnock won by 3 points, but you also have the Columbus, Macon, Augusta, Savannah, and Albany metros, which provides some margins for Democrats. Athens as well, home to the University of Georgia. If you go anywhere within the 30-minute radius of Athens, you can probably hear a bunch of dog barking sounds, so I wouldn't recommend it. But you have those areas, Valdosta even, the city itself shifting to Democrats as well. But for Republicans, you have a black belt in the middle of the state that as black people either, you know, lose population or move to the Atlanta metro, those areas become wider and thus, you know, more Republican. Republicans could have opportunities to flip a couple counties out there. South Georgia is very racially polarized and pretty majority white. That's also where the Coffee County election breach occurred, because that's where Coffee County is. This area is really, really Republican. Gives Republicans a lot of the margins there, but Republicans have still found it pretty easy to win Georgia in the modern day. However, those Republicans are not named Donald Trump or Herschel Walker. And it's been proven time and time again that those types of Republicans aren't going to do well in the modern day Georgia. Can they still win? Yes, but it would take a lot of things to go right for them. And a lot of things really didn't go right for Herschel Walker. Yes, you got the North Georgia margins you needed. You really didn't get anything else. But I'm going too much into midterm analysis. Let's focus on the presidential election. And while I will agree with Split Ticket that it is a toss-up, I think there is a possibility that the Democrats win Georgia by about, you know, 3 points or so. And the reason is just the Atlanta metro. Like, there is an offhand term that a lot of amateur analysts like myself use called Illinoisification, where it's just one state is dominated by one metro area. Think Arizona with Phoenix, or obviously Illinois with Chicago. But in Georgia, it is starting to happen. You know, Atlanta is dominating GOP politics, and because Atlanta is shifting fast, left fast, so is the state of Georgia. And this is a state, especially, of course, where the election subversion situation might have a bit more salience than in other swing states, because Brian Kemp and the Georgia Republican Party officials in particular have really made it a point to break from Donald Trump on the situation. It's like, no, you lost the presidential election, and they... And because of generally being perceived as not MAGA, they have continued to do really well. And Brian Kemp is brought up as a potential Senate nominee for the GOP against Senator John Ossoff in 2026. But Brian Kemp is not running for the GOP presidential nomination, nor is he going to be the nominee in 2024. Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. And he is much closer to Herschel Walker, the walking CTE case, than he is to a popular Southern governor like Brian Kemp. So, again, that's a toss-up. That's one where I think Democrats have the edge in. So, yeah. So, overall, the state of the race, I've given you the 8 states you need to follow to determine who is going to win the presidential election, who will be in I think it's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, correct me if I'm wrong, on January 20th, 2025, as the President of the United States. I'll be going into each of these states more in depth in the coming year, but that's neither here nor now. That will be something on the back burner for future episodes. But I've essentially given you sort of a simple breakdown into how these 8 states have trended and acted politically, and the chances that each party has to win at this moment in time. Politics is very fluid. Things can change. Joe Biden is unpopular, so maybe Republicans have a better shot in Georgia or Wisconsin than I'm giving them credit for. And then you have, obviously, Donald Trump, who has a bunch of criminal cases hanging over his head. Maybe Republicans ignore Texas being competitive or something like that, and then that maybe sneaks up under them, and all of a sudden they're sweating over whether Texas remains in their column. Like, things can change over the course of a month. So how are things going to change over the course of 14? Because we are just under 14 months out from the presidential election. And whatever I have said, whatever I will say in September of 2023 may not even apply at all to the political conditions of 2024. There are a lot of events that can happen over the course of 14 months. There are a lot of events that can happen over the course of a month, let alone 14. So our job here, my job, is to essentially follow these political conditions as they evolve, analyze them, break them down into how they affect the state of things, the state of the race in 2024, not just for the president, but for the House candidates, for the Senate candidates, and for potentially state legislative concerns, like in Alabama, for example. I just mentioned David Cole resigned. If there's a special election, we will cover it. So that ends season 2, episode 3. I hope your favorite NFL team won, and if they didn't, well, I hope they didn't suck. Unless you're the Steelers, Giants, or, well, Bengals, or any of the other teams that did absolutely terribly in week 1 and could potentially be competing for Tank Bowl status based on those results. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Especially, I don't hope that for the New Orleans Saints. I want them to win the division because those are my that's my favorite team. And, well, thank God we have a defense, and thank God that the Tennessee Titans suck. So thank you for listening to us here on Bolts of the Nation. Season 2, Episode 4, coming on Friday, and we will start off again with the weekly news flashes. Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.